Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the Michigan City Council unanimously approving a resolution asking the city's mayor to resign after he made profanity-laced remarks about a black pastor. Indiana nursing homes should be open to visitors with very few exceptions, according to new guidance from the federal government. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Laura Mathis, the director for Franciscan Senior Health and Wellness Pace Center. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The Michigan City Council has unanimously approved a resolution asking the city's mayor to resign and expressed no confidence in his ability to lead after he made profanity-laced remarks about a black pastor. All nine members of the council sponsor the resolution approved Tuesday night. Last week, the pastor, Reverend James Lane, publicly released a voicemail message Perry left for him in which the Republican mayor declined to meet with Lane and a task force seeking a meeting over Perry's recent public admonishment of his black police chief. Perry told the city council that he is, quote, not a quitter.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Indiana University Northwest Chancellor Ken Iwama on Monday awarded City of Gary Mayor Jerome Prince with the prestigious Indiana University Bicentennial Medal. The medal is awarded to individuals and organizations who have broadened the university's reach around the state as well as the world through their personal, professional, artistic, or philanthropic efforts. Chancellor Iwama, who became the seventh chancellor of the IU Northwest campus in August 2020, commended Mayor Prince for his lifelong commitment to building a sense of community in Gary. The list of IU Bicentennial Medal recipients includes Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb, billionaire investor Mark Cuban, Charles Sykes of the African American Arts Institute, award-winning IU faculty, administrators, and distinguished alumni.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Indiana has begun to lag other states in getting people vaccinated for COVID-19. And officials say that's in part because the state isn't getting as many doses. Neighboring states have begun to open vaccine eligibility to all groups. Indiana this week opened it to those 45 and older. State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box says the state is working to open eligibility to all by May 1st, the target date set by the Biden administration.
Whether we have vaccine available to everyone who is eligible, though, depends on our supply of vaccine.
According to the CDC, only six states have received fewer doses per 100,000 people. Indiana is 17th in the country in population. But Box says the federal government has indicated things should be looking up soon.
We will all be receiving large amounts of vaccine by the last week of March and into April.
Governor Eric Holcomb says he'll deliver a statewide address Tuesday, charting a path for the state out of the pandemic.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Teachers and staff in pre-K through 12 schools and child care providers may now register for appointments to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman reports the expansion officially went into effect Monday.
If you or a loved one falls into that category, you can register at ourshot.in.gov. If you're in need of assistance, you can call 211. You will need to provide some form of ID or documentation to confirm your employment and that you are an Indiana resident. The expansion includes pre-K through 12 teachers, Head Start and Early Head Start programs, licensed child care providers, center-based and family care providers, classroom aides, bus drivers, janitors, counselors, administrative staff, cafeteria workers, and substitute teachers. This follows the Biden administration's policy opening federal pharmacy programs to educators and staff. Governor Eric Holcomb said last week the federal government told Indiana to expand its state vaccination sites as well. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lauren Chapman.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Legislation aiming to crack down on fraud in Indiana's unemployment system passed a Senate committee vote Wednesday. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports it's unpopular with those who worry people who make simple mistakes could get caught in the crossfire.
House Bill 1152 would add penalties for people who don't disclose income or falsify facts when seeking unemployment benefits. Business groups, including the Indiana Chamber of Commerce and Indiana Manufacturers Association, support the bill as they say fraud negatively affects employment. Jenny Terry from Indiana Legal Services was one of several who opposed the bill. She says one of their clients is currently being investigated for fraud after making an error filing for unemployment benefits on her phone.
We are concerned that this bill in its original form or current form, expanding fraud penalties, will disproportionately hurt low-wage workers.
After a 7-3 vote along party lines, the bill goes to the Senate floor. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana's unemployment rates continue to fall in January. According to data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, it dropped almost 0.5% to reach 4.2% for this month. However, the federal agency and economists continue to note that uncertainty in employment caused by COVID-19 could mean the rate is actually a little higher. The Indiana Department of Workforce Development reports leisure and hospitality and manufacturing sectors added workers in January, while there was a slight decrease in business and financial jobs. The national unemployment rate remains 2 percentage points higher than Indiana's.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana nursing homes should be open to visitors with very few exceptions, according to new guidance from the federal government. State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box says directives from the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services order nursing homes to allow visits at all times.
These visits can occur in single occupancy resident rooms, but are still discouraged for residents in double occupancy rooms.
Box says physical touch, like hugging, is allowed for nursing home residents as long as they wear a mask and wash their hands both before and after. And facilities generally must allow visits of up to 2 hours. These new visitation rules do not apply if the local county has a COVID-19 test positivity rate of more than 10%, if there's a widespread outbreak of the virus originating in the nursing home, or if fewer than 70% of the facility's residents are fully vaccinated.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Landmark police reform legislation is just the stroke of a pen away from becoming law. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports the measure, crafted over the last year following protests around the country against police misconduct and racial inequity, was unanimously approved by the Indiana Senate Tuesday.
The bill requires all police to undergo de-escalation training and makes it easier for the state to decertify those who commit misconduct. Republican Senator Mike Young says the measure also restricts police's use of chokeholds by classifying them as deadly force.
The same as a gun. An officer only may use deadly force in certain circumstances.
Democratic Senator Eddie Melton says the bill was developed in part by the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus and has the support of groups including the NAACP, the Indiana Black Expo, and every major law enforcement organization in the state.
No way do I feel that this is the answer to all issues. However, I think this is a very good first step to address police and community relations.
The bill now heads to the governor for his signature. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Two organizations are teaming up to offer small loans to Grant County residents in an attempt to discourage reliance on high-interest payday loans. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Ella Abbott reports on how the Bridge the Gap Loan Program better financial literacy and help poor residents out of poverty.
Grant County has the third highest poverty rate in Indiana, at 16% in 2019, according to the U.S. Census. Local Afina Credit Union has developed a program to try and lower that percentage. Experts say payday loan storefronts and the cycle of debt can add to the wealth disparity, especially for communities of color. Marion is the Grant County seat and is nearly 15% African American, according to the 2019 U.S. Census. CEO of Afina, Karen Madry, says high-interest emergency loans can lead to a cycle of borrowing and repaying.
When you're in a high-poverty community, it makes the residents of the community a little bit more vulnerable. And we know that there are lenders that prey.
Madry says one of her goals is to make the credit union purpose-driven in providing equitable financial services to people who are financially vulnerable or marginalized. The Bridge the Gap program offers members immediate access to small loans from $500 to $2,500, with interest rates as low as 4.25%, unlike payday loans, where the average interest rate is nearly 400%. Dawn Brown is the CEO of the Grant County Community Foundation. Almost 3 years ago, the foundation embarked on a new strategic plan. One item was to begin an impact investing strategy in which foundations take a portion of their endowment fund and invest it into programs that can impact the community. In this case, the foundation took $1 million and invested it in the Bridge the Gap loan program. Brown says it was at a luncheon where she and Madry made the decision to try to partner. Afina had been approved as a Community Development Financial Institution, or CDFI, which meant they could provide loans to families who may otherwise not be able to get them.
And then I pitched it to my board when COVID happened, because I knew at that point these families were in even more dire straits than they had been before.
But payday lending has been creating a cycle of debt long before the pandemic began. Yasmin Farahi is Senior Policy Counsel for the Center for Responsible Lending, or CRL. She says there are 262 payday loan storefronts in Indiana alone.
This is a major problem in Indiana, draining over $300 million from Hoosier working families over 5 years.
Farahi advises organizations and lawmakers that work to eliminate abusive lending practices. She says the one-time emergency loan is a myth.
They rely on people with more than 10 loans per year, unable to meet the terms.
Sherry Dixon is the main ambassador for the Bridge the Gap program. Her job is to go out into the community and tell people about the program and encourage them to apply for a loan if they need it. She says that the position gives her the opportunity to help people without them feeling judged for their credit score or budget.
I'm actually here to offer advice on how to better your credit report, advice on how to kind of start to do a monthly budget.
As of March 1st, almost 80 loans have been given, lending more than $170,000 to members with an average credit score of 414, including 21 participants with a credit score of zero. Madry says she wants the credit union to teach people how to manage their finances and help them reach their financial goals. All of the loan officers are certified financial counselors. Each person who receives a loan will also receive personalized and free financial coaching.
One of the reasons I'm very passionate about this is because nobody ever told me.
As members pay off their loans, the money goes into a separate savings account to help them build an emergency fund. Dixon says people have been very receptive to and grateful for the program.
I know we're not supposed to be hugging, but, you know, social distancing thing. I have got some hugs out of our new members. I've gotten some tears out of new members. I've gotten just joyous remarks.
Speaking to anyone from Afina or the Community Foundation, it's clear that the program is first and foremost about the people they can help. Brown says that while there's still a return on the Community Foundation's investment by members paying interest, it isn't the only outcome they look for with the program.
But the biggest reason that we would be able to do that is because of the social return.
Madry says the program is built to help people get back on their feet once they return to work. In order to receive the loan, members are required to have a source of income, which they can show with two pay stubs.
This is to help bridge whatever gap they have as a result of being off from COVID.
Monthly payments can be as low as $35, and members are encouraged to make weekly payments of $10 to make sure they're always paying on time. The focus is on low-income families with an income of 200% or less of the federal poverty guidelines. While other programs saw stalls due to COVID-19, the Bridge the Gap program was pushed forward by it.
It was kind of pushed to the front of the line once we started seeing some of these real stories that our families were living through, and we wanted to see what we could do to just provide them some relief, some stability, and maybe just some hope.
With a five-year million-dollar investment, Madry says she hopes to see their community's poverty rate drop. While the Bridge the Gap loan is looking to end the cycle of lending in Grant County, Farahi says there are organizations and legislators working to end it at the state level.
There is a way to stop this. And so 17 states plus D.C. stop predatory payday lending with a rate cap of around 36%.
A bill in the Indiana State House has been working its way through the legislature since 2018. Farahi says getting these rate caps passed is the most effective way to end payday lending debt cycles. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Ella Abbott.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Laura Mathis.
The COVID-19 pandemic has shown all of us about the importance of making sure that seniors have the best care possible. And in fact, a group which is called PACE, or Programs of All-Inclusive Care for the Elderly, gets to focus in on keeping people within the age group of 55 and older, and those especially that are at a higher risk these days because of chronic health care needs, keep them at home or in the community, and both. And they're working out to be in these PACE centers a safer and better place than a lot of nursing home care. And let's find out more about PACE. We have with us the director of the PACE, the Franciscan Senior Health and Wellness PACE Center, in Northwest Indiana, Laura Mathis. And Laura, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Hi, thank you so much for asking for me to join to discuss this topic.
Will you spend a little time, tell us more about the PACE concept, because it's a nationwide program, really. It's not only here in Northwest Indiana, but it's around the country. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about these organizations that are set up around the country that has PACE centers, and in particular, what's set up here in Northwest Indiana.
So we are located, we're the first PACE program in Northwest Indiana. We're located, we're Franciscan Senior Health and Wellness. We are located in Dyer. And what we do is we provide a better alternative for our seniors to be able to remain in the community without having to go into long-term care. So we do everything from, we have an adult daycare that we have that we will pick up our seniors from their homes and bring them to the center, where it gives their caregiver or their family some respite care for a safe alternative for our seniors to have socialization. They can see their nurse practitioner. They can get some labs drawn. And they can also have physical therapy and occupational therapy. We also help with our seniors in those resources that are maybe lacking as we get older, like going to the dentist, eye care, hearing aids, following up with an audiologist. So we help with just that extra layer of support to keep them in their homes. We also provide caregiver support to come in and do some light housekeeping, help prepare meals, socialization, running around, taking them for errands, haircuts, maybe some shopping. We also provide occupational therapy and physical therapy at the center and in their homes. With the last year with the pandemic, we haven't had our day center open. So we had to kind of rethink our whole concept of bringing our folks to the day center for socialization. Mm-hmm. And now we had to figure out ways to socialize with them in their homes, but then also keeping them safe.
I was going to ask you about it with the pandemic as it is, you know, what they've had to do to make the adjustment from having the PACE Day Center set up to be able to do more work with some of the folks mm-hmm. at home.
So basically, we actually restructured our staff. So our nursing assistants started going to the homes and doing more helping with bathing and light housework. Our nurses were making visits to the homes to do lab draws. Our nurse practitioners were making home visits. We contract with some caregiver agencies in the area, and they were an excellent layer of support of taking up those extra, 6 to 8 hours they would be at the center, but then socializing with them in the home. So it's actually, I feel the staff has did really well in this past year, and because of the pandemic and the resources of us that we provided for our seniors is bringing more of an interest to family members who are providing care for the elderly and not having to place them in a nursing home to have that extra layer of care. So there's actually been a lot of spotlight in how positive it was for the 121 seniors that we have in Northwest Indiana that are in the program, which is good because we need more spotlight on it.
I know that, PACE in general does the same kind of care and offers the same kind of services that are covered by Medicare and Medicaid, but I guess there are also some additional services and care that don't come under Medicare and Medicaid. Will you tell us more about those?
Sure. Caregiver support, so hiring caregivers throughout the day to help with med management. We also have some dentistry services that are available that are not traditionally available through Medicaid as we get older, and we just have that flexibility to authorize services that wouldn't be considered under Medicare or Medicaid that would benefit them medically and to keep them in their homes. So the biggest thing I think is the caregiver support, that layer.
Do you find that that many of these folks, because they're now at home, rather than being the opportunity to come into the PACE Day Center, that they're able to take advantage of services like, if they're not already, take advantage of services like Meals on Wheels, which in turn adds another layer of support because we know that the folks that are volunteers with Meals on Wheels will do some often wellness checks when they're delivering meals, and that they help keep an eye on things. So they could probably report and maybe in some cases report back to the PACE team about it.
Yep. So that's a good, yes, actually Meals on Wheels. We actually partner with Meals on Wheels to supply meals for our folks. And we were, because of the pandemic and the way we just were at a standstill, our staff was actually able to volunteer with the area Meals on Wheels to deliver meals for, to help them out, to supplement for them because the volunteers really were kind of scarce. And with the pandemic, so we were able to help Meals on Wheels with that, delivering meals to our participants and other folks in Northwest Indiana.
Laura, will you take a moment here and give us a couple examples, if you can think of them, of where the opportunities that you've had to make the changes in the Franciscan Health PACE program, having to do more visits at home and rather than have folks come into the center, where they've actually helped out, and in many cases helped out the seniors that have been under the services?
Yes. Actually, the whole thought process of us having our model towards more of a home care setting, working closer with our the family members. A lot of the caregivers who would normally be working are now home with their mom or dad, and then also giving them education on how to handle certain things or to shower them or managing their medications that would have been done at the center. And also re-educating the staff that, you know, it's just a totally different mindset of preparing, going into the home, making sure you have all your wound equipment and your bags packed so you can do the dressing changes and stuff that you would normally do in the clinic or lab draws. So that was a different mindset for us.
Well, that sounds like a great opportunity to show off the program. It's probably, of course, many people that are involved know very well what the PACE programs do, but many members of the public probably are not aware of that until they happen to have a family member that has to go into some kind of services or care that is not offered by any other place other than a nursing home, I would imagine.
Right. It is. It is hard getting the word out there. We do work very closely with our area of aging, which is NWICA here. We are a referral source for seniors when they're and their families when they're calling in about extra services, maybe going on the Medicaid waiver, which is basically a step down from PACE. And then when the resources for the Medicaid waiver have been, you know, to the point where they just need that extra layer of care, they would refer to PACE. And then we would be able to provide those extra caregiver hours, help with the medication, and just help, you know, in general. I mean, just whatever we can do to keep them out of the nursing home.
Will you take a moment, Laura, and tell us how folks can get in touch and find out more about the PACE program in particular, but about the Franciscan Health PACE Center here in Northwest Indiana?
Sure. Our intake coordinator and specialist is Katie Penna and Michelle McAllister, and they could be reached at 219-864-2630.
Well, Laura, thank you very much for spending time to explain the PACE Center here in Northwest Indiana. And let's hope that we've added another layer of information out there, people can check on if they find family members or anyone, maybe themselves perhaps, that are at the situation they need some help, and especially in some better care at home. We appreciate you talking about today.
All right. Thank you so much, and you have a great day.
Thank you very much. Laura Matthews is the PACE Center Director. She's with Franciscan Health and Wellness.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.